It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
11:25, Ben Solak from ESPN will be our guest. Jay Gruden, you'll hear my conversation with Jay in the 12 o'clock hour. So Denton and I are having a conversation about who, what are under the most pressure entering the 2024 NFL season. We each have like a top five, and then we'll invite calls at 301-230-0980. Who's under the most pressure? It can be a player, it can be a coach, it can be a team, a franchise. My number one is Dallas in general. Mike McCarthy will take the arrows if they don't go to the postseason and win two playoff games. Like, I don't even think winning a wild card round game is enough. Now, if they are the top seed in the NFC, you know, they're 14-3, 13-4, they've got the one seed, they get a bye, and they win a divisional round game, and then they lose in the championship game, and they're one of the final four standing, one of the final two in the NFC, that would be a one playoff win scenario that might work for them. But for the most part, you know, I'm not projecting they'll be the number one seed in the NFC. So they need to get to the NFC title game, period. That's really the best way to put it. For me, the Cowboys, McCarthy, everybody under a lot of pressure. I don't even know if Jerry understands the feeling about his franchise outside of the Cowboy bubble that he lives in, but they're really kind of, you know, easy to mock. Despite all the wins, and they've won 12 games in the regular season, three consecutive seasons, but they just are major, major come-up short chokers in the postseason. They're number one on my list. Denton's number one is Nick Sirianni in Philadelphia. By the way, I would definitely agree with you that if the Eagles were to get off to a poor start, he's gone. He's done immediately. You know, they do have, in Vic Fangio, they do have somebody that they could elevate to head coach, even though Fangio was not a good head coach in Denver when he finally got that opportunity. But if they get off to a poor start, what is the Eagle? The Eagles start with the Packers in Brazil. Then they have the Falcons, Saints, Bucks, and Browns. Yeah, I mean, they've got to start quickly. Sirianni, would you say, what are the odds of the first coach to be fired? McCarthy's got to be the favorite, right?
Yeah, let me pull those up right now. McCarthy definitely has to be the favorite in... Actually, no. Dennis Allen is the favorite.
Oh, Dennis Allen in New Orleans.
Yeah, he's plus 300. I mean, Mike McCarthy is then plus 600. Robert Saleh plus 7.
I was going to say Saleh's probably on that list.
Yeah, as is Matt Eberflus, who we're going to talk about here in a second. And then Sirianni's plus 8.
Okay. All right, number two on my list of under the most pressure entering 2024. Lamar Jackson, and by extension, John Harbaugh. Because, you know, all of his eggs have been in the Lamar Jackson basket. And look, this is not about Lamar Jackson being a great quarterback or not being a great quarterback. He's a two-time MVP. Okay, he is one of the more unique and dynamic quarterbacks of this era. And as a two-time MVP, let me just mention, he's headed to the Hall of Fame if his career continues. And it probably doesn't have to continue for that much longer for him to get serious consideration. But there is a ton of pressure on Lamar Jackson. And again, by extension, I would say John Harbaugh. As good of a coach as Harbaugh's been, he's a Super Bowl winning head coach. The Ravens haven't done it in the postseason during the Lamar Jackson era. Not to mention that they've lost games in the postseason, you know, at home. As, yes, last year's AFC title game was against Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes. They scored 10 points. Lamar Jackson turned the ball over twice. Critical moments. They lost at home to Tennessee when they were the one seed in 2020 with Lamar Jackson as the starting quarterback that whole year and as an MVP. Baltimore's got to get to a Super Bowl. They might not have to win a Super Bowl, but they have to get to a Super Bowl. There is pressure on Lamar Jackson and, by extension, John Harbaugh, big-time pressure this year to get to a Super Bowl. They're my number two on this list. What's your number two?
Number two, very similar to you. It's a quarterback and then, by extension, the head coach. But I'm looking in Buffalo with Josh Allen and Sean McDermott. This is going to be a completely different-looking Buffalo Bills team now with no Stephon Diggs. And really, as we sit here now, no definitive number one wide receiver. I mean, I think Keon Coleman
could be
good.
Who is the number one wide receiver there? It's not Curtis Samuel.
It might be Curtis Samuel.
Really?
They do have a big-time tight end.
I mean, they do have...
They have Dawson Knox, or Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox. But right now, I mean, listen to this. Their wide receivers, Khalil Shakir, who's good, but he's probably like a three. Keon Coleman, who has never played an NFL down, and Curtis Samuel.
Florida State, yep.
Yeah, so like... You look at the. I mean, they have Marquez Valdes-Scantling. That doesn't move the needle.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have a true number one wideout. And regardless of how big of a pain in the ass Steph Diggs has been wherever he's been, and we'll see what happens with him in Houston, but he's a number one wide receiver.
Exactly.
And in this day and age, you got to have one.
You got to have one. And you know, Josh Allen has a lot of the things that you just said about Lamar Jackson, although I would actually twist it, because I do think, generally speaking, if you're to ask just normal NFL fans, most people probably hold Josh Allen a little bit higher on the quarterback pecking order than Lamar Jackson, despite Lamar's multiple MVPs. But the multiple MVPs are the one thing that Josh Allen does not have. So I look at him being under the most pressure, and then Sean McDermott, if it doesn't go well for them, he's the one that's getting fired. They're going to try and bring somebody else in and maybe revamp the whole situation with Josh Allen. But because they look at him, multiple people, I mean, you have said that you think he's the second best quarterback in the NFL. I think he's a top four quarterback in the NFL. That seems to be widely regarded across the league, yet we always see them fall just a little short, whether it be to Kansas City, to Cincinnati, whoever, in the postseason. It always feels like they're on the outside looking in when the games really, really start to matter.
So two things. I'm surprised that you have that as your number two, because I think this, it's not that it's a rebuilding year for Buffalo, because you can't be in rebuilding mode when Josh Allen is your quarterback, right? But in many ways, there's much less expected of them this year than there was last year or the year before. And then secondly, as it relates to kind of the comparison between Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, and I'm pulling it up right now as I speak, but Josh Allen in losses in the postseason has been brilliant. He's been an incredible postseason quarterback. Lamar Jackson has not been. So Lamar is 2-4 in the postseason, 6 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, a 57.44% completion percentage. He's not played well in the postseason. Josh Allen, as a starting quarterback in the postseason, is 5-5, 21 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, 64.55% completion percentage. And let's not forget, he has played in some of the more brilliant playoff games in recent memory. The 42-36 overtime loss, when they never got a chance to get the ball after he drove him down the field and threw to Gabe Davis, right? I think it was Gabe Davis for the touchdown to tie it. And they lost to the Chiefs in overtime in that one of the greatest playoff games we've ever seen. And then they had, another gut-wrenching playoff loss last year to the Chiefs. They had the championship game loss to the Chiefs when they clobbered the Ravens in the postseason.
Yeah.
I just think that Josh Allen's postseason performance is apples and oranges compared to Lamar's.
I would agree with that, but because people hold him much higher, like there have been games where I felt
he hasn't won an MVP.
He has not won an MVP. But
yeah,
speaking of that, I mean, did you see the graphic that was thrown up on socials yesterday?
No.
So it's a list of the most turnovers since 2020. It's separated into tiers. By the way, tier number six, Carson Wentz, Commanders legend. He played 39 games in that span. He turned the ball over 42 times.
These are QB turnovers?
These are QB turnovers.
Let me guess. I haven't seen this list.
So there's six tiers to this.
What are the tiers titled?
So tier six is 40-plus. Tier five is 45-plus. Tier four is 50-plus. Then you get a 55-plus for tier three. It takes a big jump. Tier two is 65-plus. And then tier one is 75-plus.
So you're about to tell me Josh Allen is tier one.
Right? Josh Allen is tier one by 14 turnovers.
Yeah. Well, there's he's no had a lot of turnovers.
Yeah.
There is no doubt. Ironically, they haven't come in the postseason in the games that have mattered the most.
Except for that one postseason game against Houston. That was years ago. I don't hold that against him now.
That was the first playoff game.
The
right?
first one where he lateraled it when he shouldn't have. And
yes,
everyone was just
that.
Like, dog, yeah. What are you doing?
Okay, is Trevor, what is it, the last how many years?
Since 2020.
Is Trevor Lawrence on that list?
He is tier three at 60 turnovers.
Is Daniel Jones on that list?
Daniel Jones, shockingly, Daniel Jones has only turned the ball over 41 times in that time span. I mean, that is the most surprising number of this entire thing.
I'm just looking through the standings here to try to come up with quarterbacks. I don't know.
Well,
tell me.
Hilariously, Tom Brady is on the list, despite the fact that he hasn't played in 2 years at 41.
How about Jameis Winston?
No, he hasn't played enough.
Oh, he hasn't played enough.
Yeah, he hasn't played enough. The tier three guys are Derek Carr at 61, Trevor Lawrence at 60, and then Jared Goff at 58.
Okay.
And Lamar's at 51, Mahomes 54, Kirk 53, Stafford 52, and then it's just everybody at that point. I mean, when you played so many games in that time.
Yeah, I mean, when you've played so many games and you've thrown so many balls, you're gonna have some turnovers. I bet Aaron Rodgers isn't very high on that list.
He is not. He is nowhere to be found here.
Because he didn't really throw many picks, despite throwing the ball a lot, right?
Yeah, not only he didn't play last year, but even if he did play last year, I mean, there were a couple years, those MVP seasons, he had like four picks.
Exactly. Speaking of that, continuing with our list then. So my number one entity, you know, player, coach, team, whatever, with the most pressure entering 2024 is Dallas and Mike McCarthy specifically. Number two for me is Lamar Jackson, by extension, John Harbaugh. The Ravens have to get to a Super Bowl. Lamar's got to change the narrative on his postseason performance. And by the way, he will have plenty of opportunities to do that, but he's got to do it sooner rather than later, because as great as he's been in the regular season, it's been a dud in the postseason. You had Sirianni in Philadelphia number one, Josh Allen and Buffalo number two. For me, number three is the guy we were just talking about, Aaron Rodgers. Look, in two of the last three seasons in which he played, he won the MVP. He will go down as one of the greatest quarterbacks that has ever lived. He won a Super Bowl, came up awfully short in a lot of postseasons, some of the time not his doing. Some of the time he was part and parcel to it. But this, you know, persona that he's taken on off the field of being this, you know, deep thinking, you know, at times very political. By the way, you saw he apologized the other day for saying that he was immunized during COVID, whatever. The injury on play number four on one of the most electric nights of the season last year that went completely silent after four plays. I mean, the anticipation of Aaron Rodgers against the Bills on Monday Night Football, of the Jets in general last year, was more than anything else that we witnessed during the offseason. And he comes back and, you know, he took the trip to Egypt and he missed some of the offseason time. And the bottom line is that at 40 years old, this is going to be kind of the last chance, you know, maybe in 2025 as well. But I think Aaron Rodgers has to lead the Jets to the postseason. I think there's a lot of pressure on him. I bet he feels it to a certain degree. By the way, I think he'll deliver if he's healthy. But I think there's a lot of pressure on Aaron Rodgers to get the Jets to, you know, call it 10-plus wins in the postseason. I don't think he needs to win the Super Bowl. Look, in the AFC, with Kansas City, with Baltimore, with, you know, Cincinnati, with, you know, it's going to be hard to get to a Super Bowl. I think if the Jets got to the playoffs for the first time in 15 years and won a playoff game, that would be a massive success. But I think there's pressure on him to get that done. He's number three on my list.
Number three for me is Kyle Shanahan. You know, we hold him in very high regard on this show because we recognize that he is brilliant at his job, but he's come so close on multiple occasions to hoisting the Lombardi, and it's been stripped away, and it's been stripped away. And, you know, dealing with Mahomes is a completely different beast, so I understand that element of it. But having it, it feels like he just constantly kind of finds creative ways to lose. He's a part of the 28-3. Then his quarterback, who he traded for, overthrows a wide-open Emmanuel Sanders. And then last year they lose in overtime. So he finds creative ways to lose in the Super Bowl. But I hold him in such high regard. I'm looking at him saying, all right, like, this could be the final hurrah for the way the 49ers are currently constructed. We know Ayuk wants out. Debo Samuel probably is going to want out soon. You're going to have to pay Brock Purdy, and once you pay that quarterback, it makes it very difficult to keep everybody else around. You start have to rely on these rookie contracts at other important positions. So this might be the last real great opportunity for, you know, 2 or 3 years for this team to win a Super Bowl. And you look at their standing in the NFC, and they're the projected favorites. So I'm looking at Kyle Shanahan saying he's under a lot of pressure this year.
Yeah, they're my number four. The 49ers are my number four and Kyle Shanahan. The interesting part of that is that if they don't win the Super Bowl next year, it's not like Kyle's losing his job. You know, there's no pressure on him job-wise. He has proven to be an elite head coach. The organization has proven to be a first-rate organization, no doubt. You know, John Lynch, by the way, is tied to Kyle to a certain degree. I just think that, like you said, if it doesn't happen this year, if they don't get over the hump and win it, and wouldn't we all love to root for a team that's been to two Super Bowls in the last 4 years, was on the verge of two others, right? They lost two NFC championship games, one in which, you know, their safety dropped an interception that would have ended the game against the Rams. And the other one was when their starting quarterback, backup quarterback, and third string quarterback essentially all got hurt, and you had Christian McCaffrey taking Wildcat snaps at the end of the game at Philadelphia. We'd all love to in this town anyway, to have been able to root for what San Francisco has achieved. I mean, he has proven himself to be an elite head coach, but the window is closing, and they better get it done this year, because if they don't and they have to pay Brock Purdy next offseason, or make the decision on whether or not to pay Brock Purdy, it kind of may start all over again for them. You know, he's had a couple of bad seasons. It's not like every single season under Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco. Now, the seasons in which they've struggled were seasons in which they lost their starting quarterback, right? They had the one season with Garoppolo out, and they were playing Nick Mullins. That was 2020. That was the COVID year, because Washington went down and beat San Francisco late in the season that year. Went out to San Francisco and won that game. He was 6-10 his first year, 4-12 his second year, then 13-3 lost to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, and then Garoppolo got hurt. They were 6-10, and then the last 3 years, 10-7, 13-4, 12-5. All three of those years to the NFC Championship game, two championship game losses, one gut-wrenching overtime Super Bowl loss to the Chiefs. So I'm with you. What's your number four?
Number four is Lamar and John Harbaugh. You kind of nailed a lot of the reasons for that. It feels like Lamar is kind of running out of excuses in the postseason. Like, you could look back at the Kansas City game and say, well, why didn't they run? It's the offensive coordinator. You could look back at some of those older postseason losses and say, oh, it was Greg Roman. Like, he wasn't doing, the offense wasn't good. They weren't throwing it. And now I feel like you're kind of out of those excuses. He has to be better in the postseason. You can be really good in the regular season. That's fine. You can stack MVPs. You'll go to the Hall of Fame. All that's great. But my guess is that he's playing because he wants to win a championship. He wants to hoist that Lombardi trophy. He needs to be better in the postseason. A lot of it is now coming down on his shoulders, and I think you'll see it this year.
My number five is Philadelphia and Nick Sirianni. Bottom line is, if the Eagles don't win 10, 11 plus games and get back to the postseason and be a threat in the postseason, winning postseason games, Jeffrey Lurie's starting all over again. I mean, there were already discussions about Sirianni being gone. They're going to pick Hurts over Sirianni if that's where the issue is. So the Eagles are five. But I will tell you, and we'll come back to this a little later on, I think I had a really strong number six on my list that almost made it into the top five. But what was your number five?
Number five for me is Matt Eberflus of the Chicago Bears. I was stunned that they kept him this year. It would have made so much sense to start rookie Caleb Williams with a new head coach, and then those two guys are kind of linked together for a little bit, and they can grow together. But you allow Matt Eberflus, after the Justin Fields thing does not work, and the offense got better at the end of last year, but they struggled for a lot of his tenure there, allowing him to keep the job and now be the guy that ushers in Caleb Williams. This organization has their future banking on Caleb Williams being successful, which means if they don't start out very, very well, and they have high expectations, whether they should or not, because they have a rookie is a different story, but their roster is built very, very well, that should make it easier for Caleb Williams to step in and succeed. If that doesn't happen, Matt Eberflus is going to be out of a job, and he's one of those dudes, Kevin. If Matt Eberflus is out of a job, I don't know that he works his way back up to being an NFL head coach again. If he does, it's going to take a couple of years. So this might be his last hoorah as an NFL coach.
All right. For those of you on hold, I apologize. Terrible clock management on my part today, because we have a guest scheduled next. We'll come back to this next hour. Jeff, Joe, Steve, everybody else on hold. We'll come back to this and get your number one, who's under the most pressure entering the 2024 NFL season next hour. I promise. Sorry about that. Ben Solak from ESPN.com will be our guest next.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not doing well today with clock management. The guest isn't scheduled until 11:35. So those of you on hold with your number one, who's under most pressure, coach, player, organization, etc., entering the 2024 NFL season, we will get to your calls. But I'm just going to tell you, Denton, I have a number six that didn't make my top five that almost made my top five. And I think it's a good one, and I think it's one that people wouldn't be thinking of. But Jeff in Vienna. Jeff, go ahead. Thanks for holding.
Happy Thursday, Kevin. You're fine on the clock with me. Couple quick thoughts on Ted on the Olympics and everything. By the end of October, Taylor Swift will have played every NFL stadium in the U.S. except for two, Washington and Baltimore.
Yeah, good point.
And the World Cup,
right, passed on us too.
Around.
Yeah,
and the World Cup came here and sniffed around and passed on us as well. I don't know why anybody thinks the Olympics would come here.
By the way, the World Cup, Jeff, passing on D.C., this is one of the most interested soccer markets in the U.S. I think Seattle, Portland, New York, there are a couple of them. But D.C.'s, in probably the top five in terms of, passion for soccer, because we're such a diverse international city. The fact that the World Cup isn't going to play anything close to here is really telling. Agreed. But of course, none of those events can build their own stadium for the event. Keep that in mind too. But go ahead.
Yeah, I've got that. And then just on to the NFL. I got the Jets down as number one. They decided to throw them on all these primetime games again.
Yeah.
I know you mentioned Rodgers solo. And if I heard that guy who plans the TV schedule out correctly on a million different interviews, like, the Jets owe us this year. And I'm like, oh, really? So when they're 6-11 in November, let's talk about it again.
They took a big gamble. Listen to this. In the first half of the season, okay, over their first, let's see what this is, 4, 8, call it 9 games. They're in prime time 1, 2, 3, 4 times, and they're on an NFL Network London game as well, 5 times. If you extend it to 10 games, they're in prime time 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times in the first 10 weeks of the season, and they're in one of the international games. Crazy.
Yep. Yeah,
they better hope he stays upright.
Exactly. I've got the Texans number 2. The hype is on them, but going from fourth place to first place schedule is going to be a big step for them. And
yeah.
I hope they do well. I like Stroud, but they've got a different year this year. I had Lamar at number 3. And at number 4, I have the Browns. The Deshaun Watson thing, they've either got a fish or cut bait with this guy at that money level.
Yeah. Although cutting bait would be a disaster, actually, from a cap standpoint. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it. Let's go to Joe in Springfield. Joe, who or what team or, you know, anything else is under the most pressure entering the 2024 season?
Hey, Kevin, what's going on?
Hey, Joe.
All right, so I got 2, and I got a side note. So the first one and the number one is Mike McCarthy and the Dallas Cowboys. Kevin, there's a possibility that Mike McCarthy could get fired in October, whether after they host Detroit at 4:25 or after their bye week when they go to San Francisco. I mean, Kevin, the first couple of weeks, they got Cleveland, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Detroit, and the 49ers. I mean, they could be 2-4. McCarthy could be shown the door right there. So that's number one. Number two, and I'll explain why I'm saying this, the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's not because of Mike Tomlin, because Mike Tomlin is hands down a Hall of Fame coach in the future. He's definitely a Hall of Famer. Russell Wilson is the reason for that. This is Russell Wilson's third team in 4 years. It didn't end well in Seattle. He clashed with Sean Payton in Denver. You really think he's going to clash with Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh? Because Mike Tomlin, everything's open competition with Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin never puts up with any egos, and Russell Wilson is not the kind of person that wants to mess with Mike Tomlin, because Mike Tomlin will definitely sit you. So those are the two. And my side note, look, I agree with both of you about Lamar Jackson, because – you know, this is a make-or-break year, and you go out and get Derrick Henry, you got to run the darn football. You have Lamar
It's not
Jackson,
make or break. Derrick I want to be clear on that. It's not like they're going to move on from Lamar Jackson if they get knocked off in the playoffs again. He's a two-time MVP. There's just a building pressure for him to prove that he can get it done in the postseason. I think that's unmistakable. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Robert in Annapolis. Finish it up for us, Robert.
All right. Well, I'm certainly going to agree on the comments on Lamar, but in all fairness, look, in his 6 seasons, 2018, his rookie year, he took over midway through, put him on a winning streak, got him in the playoffs. He wasn't playoff ready. He didn't play well against San Diego, but he almost pulled it out in the last
he did.
Quarter. 2019, you can hold him to some degree accountable, but if you look, he actually had good stats in that game.
Yeah, but they were behind.
They lost,
you know. They were behind.
Well, but they turned the ball over on offense, so you can attribute that to him to some degree, but the defense couldn't stop Derrick Henry or Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah.
In 2020, he won a playoff game. He got concussed in that Buffalo game, so in the beginning of the second half.
Right.
So,
but they were getting their ass kicked in that game, weren't they? I think they were, Robert.
But if you analyze it, I'm not excusing him, but the next 2 years, he got injured at the end of the year, and so he's not involved there. And last year, he did not play well, agreed. But on Kyle Shanahan, I would not call him a great head coach at this time. Great offensive mind, yes. But you put another coach, if you're picking on that roster with that talent, they probably would have had a Super Bowl. Thanks for fitting me in, man.
I disagree, obviously, on Kyle. I understand what his strength is. It's as an offensive mind. But because that strength is so over-the-top special in terms of what they've been able to do offensively, look, he's, you know, 4 out of the last 5 years, they have been on the verge of winning a Super Bowl. I mean, he's 13 games over 500 in the regular season. He's 8-4 as a playoff coach. I'm not telling you that he's in the Hall of Fame as of now. He's not. But he's also, how old is Kyle? Is Kyle even 45 years old yet? Is he even, he's in his early 40s, right?
He's 44. He'll be 45 in December.
Yeah, I mean, this dude's going to be a head coach for the next 10 to 15 to maybe 20 years. All right, we've got a guest next. We'll talk some NFL with Ben Solak from ESPN.com. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. Give you an update from the Miami joint practice coming up here next hour. Miami's beat group seems to be very impressed with Jaden Daniels. It's a joint practice, people. But there was an injury, not to a significant player. We're trying to get Ben standing on the show before the end of it. We'll see if it works out based on the timing of this joint practice ending. Jumping on with us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest listener line, is Ben Solak from ESPN. I read for a while yesterday, and we talked a lot about the story that he wrote about Brandon Ayuk. You know, should the 49ers trade him or should they pay him? And I read, you know, a good part of the description of Ayuk under the heading, just how good is Brandon Ayuk. We can talk to Ben about a lot of other things, but I wanted to start there because I think one of the things, so I have thought all along, A, it would be absolutely idiotic if the 49ers traded him. The Super Bowl is the goal for them this year, and he is significant to their chances. Why would they want to give him up for a second and a fourth and a player and lessen their chances? And then on the flip side, Ben, I've been an advocate, you know, as long as Adam Peters likes the person, for Washington to be aggressive in trying to trade for him. And the pushback, I really think, stems from some of the stuff you wrote about the wide receiver position being really hard to kind of sort out. You know, you wrote the position is so oversaturated with talent, it warps our perspective on somebody like Brandon Ayuk. And so I wanted to start there with just how talented the wide receiver position is in the game and how hard it is to decipher, you know, between these guys, putting them into the proper categories because there's so much context around their performance.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I want to let you know your audio is going in and out. So
Ben, we're kind of losing you. We don't have a good connection with Ben. Let's see if we can reestablish Denton. That was his line, right?
Yes, it was. I'm going to give him a call back.
Yeah, let's see if we can get him back. Because I think he was telling us that there's an issue with him hearing our broadcast on our hotline. But yeah, we'll talk more NFL. We're not going to make this exclusive to Brandon Ayuk, but I think there's a lot in his dissection of Brandon Ayuk and whether or not it makes sense to trade Brandon Ayuk and to whom that speaks to just the wide receiver position in the league. Let me know when we have him.
He's back.
Back. All right, we've got Ben. Ben, I think you heard my setup, and then you were breaking up. But let's see if we've got a clearer connection now. Go ahead.
No, this sounds way smoother to me. I was trying to figure out your question with kind of every other word there a little bit.
Well, essentially, what I said was I loved your story, and I read from it a lot on the show yesterday. But it just illustrates, you know, there's this one line that you've got in your story where you write about the wide receiver position. It's oversaturated with talent, which warps our perspective. And I thought you could just start there on the challenges of evaluating this position right now.
Yes. So the reality of wide receiver in the league is that there are so many different body types that can work. There's so many different roles that can work. There's so many different ways to be successful at wide receiver that it becomes very hard to say, like, okay, who's the best? Who's the second best? Who's the top 10 guy? Like, take Amon-Ra St. Brown, for example, the wide receiver for the Detroit Lions. Probably, like, pound for pound, one of the most talented receivers in the league. Maybe the most talented, like, in terms of the routes and in terms of the hands and in terms of the technical aspects of the position, the stuff that you can train, the stuff that you can drill. The reality is that he does not have the speed of like a full deep threat all the way down the field nine ball guy, nor does he have the size of like a contested catch guy down the field. So he ends up being a slot receiver who largely does his work 5 to 15 yards down the field. It's just not as valuable of a role as like a Mike Evans, who, you know, arguably you would say, oh, maybe he's less talented, runs worse routes than Amon-Ra St. Brown, but hey, he's 6'5", 230, and he can moss guys. And so you go and you get in those targets down the field. So because there's such a variety of body types that work, and there's such a variety of ways to make those body types work, you end up with a guy on like every team who you can argue at any given time is like, oh, maybe he's top 15, top 20. Like Terry McLaurin is excellent. George Pickens is excellent. Like you just have other, the random guys from random, you know, oh, Calvin Ridley with the Titans. Oh, Christian Kirk with the Jaguars. Like, are any of these guys like, you know, making you quiver in your boots? No, but like also any of them at any time can go for 1,200 yards in a season, right? So we have that level of wide receiver production. Accordingly, when you have a player like Brandon Ayuk, who's definitely talented, no question that he is, but also play to the most explosive offense in the league, and also gets to play next to Deebo Samuel and George Kittle, and then gets a lot of curated coverages and predictable coverages because he plays in a Shanahan offense, we know for sure that he's good. We're positive. He's definitely good. How good is he? I mean, somebody else got to figure that out. That is a very challenging question to answer relative to the rest of the wide receivers in the league.
Yeah. You know, like you said, like part of it, too, is what you just specifically mentioned relating to Ayuk is how much of it is Kyle and what they do to get people open in the run game, et cetera. But I'm wondering, with all of that said, are there, in your opinion, a couple of guys that you feel confident are in that elite category, and no matter where they would be, unless they were playing with an absolute horrendous quarterback situation, would be elite?
Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill. And I think that I'm almost there with CeeDee Lamb. I think that the player that CeeDee Lamb has become has gotten to that point. Like, you know, his role has changed a lot over his time there in Dallas. They use him more on the outside. They use him on a more diverse route tree. He probably still is a little bit more of like a slot merchant and a free release merchant than I think a Justin Jefferson is or a Ja'Marr Chase is. He's right on the cusp. I think if this were Dallas radio, I probably would have just said CeeDee Lamb so I didn't get yelled at. But definitely Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, and Tyreek Hill. To me, like, I would say those are the three for sure.
You know what's interesting about that? I agree with you, and I think that a lot of people would come up with those three. And personally, I would have had Davante Adams closer than CeeDee Lamb, but whatever.
Adams is a great call out as well. Yeah, yeah.
What's interesting about that, Ben, is that you talked about the less value in being primarily in the slot. And Kevin O'Connell consistently looking for the right matchups would have at times Jefferson, when the ball was snapped, whether it was through motion or formation, in the slot. Tyreek Hill, the same thing. Is there really a massive difference in value in those that... I'm not saying Jefferson is... He's an outside guy. We understand that. But many times he ended up in the slot based on them trying to create the right kind of matchups. Explain to everybody why there's a huge value difference between the guy that lines up in the slot primarily versus on the outside.
So there's two key points. The first is that it is much harder to press a slot receiver than it is to press an outside receiver.
True.
Slot receivers typically lined up out off of the ball, right off the line of scrimmage. Outside receivers more frequently line up on the ball. Obviously, bunch formations, Shanahan offense, people change this a lot. But generally, your slot receiver is harder to press because it's harder to get a nickel defender up to the line of scrimmage. You typically need that guy to be off the line of scrimmage a little bit because he has to be in the run fit, right? So it's more difficult to press a slot than it is to press an outside receiver. And then secondly, when you're lined up in the slot, you have what we call two-way go on offense. That means when I go into my route, I can break inside or I can break outside. Versus when you line up the receiver outside the numbers, you can break inside, run a slant, run a dig. You can't really break outside. You're going to go into the sideline, right? And so because we have a two-way go from the slot, and because we're getting pressed less frequently from the slot, it is easier to be successful as a route runner, as a separator, as an underneath target. It is dramatically easier to do that from the slot than from the outside. Accordingly, when we see players who are dominant on the outside, we say, okay, this means a little bit more. Think about like a Ja'Marr Chase in Cincinnati, just always lining up on the outside. This means a little bit more than a player like Amon-Ra St. Brown always lining up in the slot and generally being dominant in the slot, because it's a little bit more challenging. Then you talk about a player like Justin Jefferson, and you say, all right, we know he's elite. We know we can line him up on the outside and he would win most reps. But hey, like, it is easier from the slot, and we can run more routes from the slot. We can run those in-breaking routes and those out-breaking routes. So let's put Jefferson there. Let's take our elite player and then also get the added benefits, the added ease, the added advantages of putting a player in the slot. And that's why you see guys like Tyreek Hill and Justin Jefferson and even Ja'Marr Chase. Chase was asking early in the offseason to play more time in the slot. Something he wants to do now that Tyler Boyd isn't on that team anymore, because, hey, it's a lot easier there to be successful.
Who's the best pure slot receiver in the game right now? Somebody who lines up exclusively as a slot receiver?
So there probably isn't like a guy who lines up exclusively. The answer should be St. Brown. He is predominantly used as a slot receiver. If you go and you look at his data, you'll see a lot of reps where it's like, oh, he's the outside receiver in this set. Oftentimes that's what we call a condensed set. That's a set where the outside receiver is still lined up in the slot. He's still tight in the formation. I would say Cooper Kupp also, like when Cooper Kupp had the triple crown there at Los Angeles in 2021, when he had led the league in receiving touchdowns and receptions and receiving yards, he did a lot of that work from the slot. And again, very condensed formations. Rams and Lions offense is very similar. They even when he was outside, he would still be lined up tight to the formation, so he'd get that inside-outside release. I think those are your guys who you would put up there. There's obviously dudes who are like just slot receivers in the league. There are your like Tyler Boyds of the world. Tyler Boyd is a great slot receiver who just plays in the slot. He can't really do anything on the outside of it. Tyler Lockett with a little bit of that. And he obviously gets deeper down the field in that defense, but Lockett's of a similar mold. Guys like that.
Talking to Ben Solak from ESPN. So back to Ayuk, because you made the case that he had one of the great seasons in recent memory in 2023 when you talked about his explosive rate and his catch percentage rate in combination. Mm-hmm. Just explain that to everybody that's listening.
Yeah, I think anybody who watches football will tell you that if I want to throw the ball 40 yards down the field, I'm less likely to get a completion than if I throw it 4 yards down the field, right? Much easier to complete passes at one of your line of scrimmage than further down the field. And so the typical trade-off that we make, the typical exchange, is that if we're going to throw the ball, you know, intermediate level of the field, 15 yards down the field, if we're going to throw a deep bomb 30 yards down the field, we know this might end up being second and 10. We know this might land to be an incompletion. One of the things that Ayuk did last year was he led the league in explosive catch rate. It was one of the highest explosive catch rates of the last 5 years. We're talking about 20-plus yard gains on the catch. And yet still had a dramatically above-average catch rate. What a Brandon Ayuk target was extremely likely to equal a positive play and also extremely likely to equal an explosive positive play, a top-tier positive play. That's preposterous. That's not how this is supposed to work. It's supposed to be, if I'm throwing the ball to Will Fuller, or if I'm throwing the ball to DeSean Jackson, or I'm throwing the ball to Ted Ginn Jr. and all these field stretchers, then, hey, like, this might not work. And Brandon was like, no, it's going to work. Don't worry about it. Like, this is just an automatic 24 yards. Would you like that in your offense? Is that helpful? That's unbelievable. It's a total cheat code. And so if that success is endemic to Ayuk, if it's Ayuk's talent that's creating that, he's one of the most valuable players in the league. If it's Kyle Shanahan's offense that's creating that, then we ought to talk a little bit more about, okay, fit, how much of this is IU, can he take this somewhere else, so on and so forth.
So what's the conclusion to that? And maybe you didn't reach it, although I do feel like you had a strong opinion that he elevated Kittle, McCaffrey, and Samuel more than the opposite of that, that it was more him elevating the production of all of that talent on offense versus him being elevated by somebody other than him specifically.
Yeah, so I think that if Brandon Ayuk were to leave the 49ers, it would be unreasonable to expect him to deliver the season he just did. 1,300 receiving yards, insane efficiency. It's not going to be that good. I still think it can be pretty good. I still think that he can be a high explosive rate receiver because he has such great long speed. He's good after the catch. He's great separating on those intermediate routes. He's probably not going to have as good of a catch rate, right? Brock Purdy really trusted him with throwing him the ball. You know, he's tightly covered and let Ayuk do work for him. You go play for Russell Wilson, it's not going to be the same, right? If you go play for like a Jayden Daniels, you know, okay, he'll trust you. He'll throw these explosive patterns, but it's going to be more erratic because he's a rookie. So I do think that the catch rate would go down. I think the consistency would go down. But I do think that Ayuk deserves a pretty big portion of that pie, a pretty good share of the success. And so is he top five, which kind of, you know, his season numbers last year would indicate? Probably not. Is he, you know, definitely like fringe top 10, certainly top 15? Yeah, I think so. I think you're looking at like one of the better wide receiver ones in the league, one of the top half wide receiver one in the league. And there isn't a team in the NFL who would say no to that, right? Everybody needs a talent like that, a wide receiver.
You know, I think the other thing, too, and your focus was much more on, obviously, the pass reception aspect of this. But, you know, Jay Gruden was on with me and just said, Brandon Ayuk is a phenomenal blocker. Juwan Jennings, he said, it may be the best wide receiver blocker in the league. But the 49er group with Samuel, Ayuk, and Jennings is the best group of wide receivers who block that may have ever been assembled. So how do you view him as a blocker?
He's an excellent blocker, and a big part of him getting out of Kyle Shanahan's doghouse, because we have to remember the 2021 season,
right.
Shanahan was pretty frustrated with that. A big part of that was the dirty work he started to do as a blocker. And if you're going to play in this offense, we talked about Cooper Kupp and St. Brown lining up tight to the formation. If you're going to line up tight to the formation in this Kyle Shanahan offense, you have to be able to go block somebody. You have to be part of the running game, part of the run-blocking design. So absolutely, Juwan Jennings is the GOAT in this regard. He's unbelievable. But Brandon Ayuk does more than his fair share, especially for being a little bit of a thinner player. He's not like, you know, the stockiest guy. He goes and he does his work. That's very valuable for Kyle Shanahan. It's not as valuable for other teams, right? And so, like, if we brought up the Commanders again, in a Cliff Kingsbury offense, you know, air raid, we spread the sucker out four wide. Wide receiver blocking, it's good to be a good, what we call a stock blocker, where you can go and block a guy on a wide receiver screen, right? Throw a little bubble screen to Terry McLaurin, Brandon Ayuk goes and hits a nice block. That's valuable, but it's not nearly as valuable as if you were tight to the formation blocking on a running play. And that's just not going to be part of the offense in Washington. They're not going to ask the receivers to block very much. And so Ayuk's blocking talent is definitely, like, it's there. He's a good blocker. How much that matters for the team acquiring him depends a lot on scheme. Because if you're not running this system, you don't actually need your wide receivers to be that good at blocking.
I actually think it's going to be more valuable here than you think going in. I think they're going to be more run heavy than people are thinking, because they think Cliff Kingsbury isn't that. But I think there'll be a lot of sort of what he did with Connor and Chase Edmonds in 2021, more emphasis on the run. But we'll see. We're talking to Ben Solak. He can be followed on X on Twitter, at Benjamin Solak, S-O-L-A-K. I love this story that he did the other day. So let me just conclude with this aspect of the discussion. Do you think the 49ers should trade Ayuk? Do you think they will? And if they did, where would the best fit be?
Should? No, they should not. They should keep Brandon Ayuk. He's the youngest of their weapons, right? Talk about Kittle and McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel. Yeah. He's the youngest guy. He's the guy that I think can better shepherd them into the future once they have to start living in the world where Brock Purdy's making $55, $60 million a year. I would be keeping Brandon Ayuk. I would be looking to trade Deebo Samuel before I trade Brandon Ayuk. Will they trade Brandon Ayuk? Ask Schefter, man. Like, at this point, I don't know. Like, this has been going on for weeks. I lean no. I think they're going to get this ball across the line, right? They've had, you know, Deebo Samuel requested a trade two summers ago and, like, wasn't talking to them about contracts at all, and they were able to unfreeze that ice and re-mend those fences and then get that extension done. And so they've you know, gotten out of sticky situations before. I think they'll get this done. I think it'll be an extension and they keep him. But, like, I'm 51 extension, 49 they trade him. You know, like, it is about 50-50 as things look from the outside. Which team would be the best to acquire him? I mean, like, it seems like no matter what, he's going to be a Steeler. I think the fit with the Steelers is good from a schematic perspective. You're going to see a lot of those in-breaking routes that he's been so good at with Kyle Shanahan. You're going to see a lot of those from Arthur Smith, who's the OC there in Pittsburgh. So I think that's a good fit. They involve their wide receivers in the blocking scheme. I think that'll help them out with Brandon Ayuk. Obviously, quarterback situation there is a total mess, right? It's completely up and down. But you're playing for a guy in Mike Tomlin who's a really good players coach. So he can, I think, help. You know, if Ayuk is frustrated by lack of targets, frustrated by lack of success, I think that Tomlin is pretty well equipped to kind of keep that comfortable and keep that okay and keep those tempers down until they can solve the quarterback position. So Pittsburgh is a good fit. I think of the teams that were rumored, probably the best fit was Cleveland, but it sounds like they're out of the deal right now. Washington is a fine fit because it's a spread and shred, space you out sort of an offense, and I used to have so much speed. So it's a fine fit. I think that a player I use talent fits just about anywhere, but of the teams rumored, Cleveland was probably best. I do think that if he gets traded, he ends up at Pittsburgh, and I think that's a good fit for him as well.
You wrote in your column, and I read this yesterday too, about the wide receiver position. You said, you know, it warps our perspective because it's so oversaturated with talent when we talk about, you know, who the best are. You wrote the 15th best quarterback in the league is someone like Kirk Cousins or Jared Goff. The 15th best pass rusher is somebody like Alex Highsmith or Rashawn Gary. But the 15th best wide receiver is closer to Mike Evans. And, you know, and then you referenced the Jeremy Fowler, you know, surveying of the coaches, the execs, league execs, when he was doing his top 10 at each position, and 29 different receivers got at least one vote for the top 10. And you wrote, the cream of the receiver crop has never been richer. Terry McLaurin essentially came in 21st on that list. Where would you have him?
A little bit higher. I love me a scary Terry. I do. I think that if we could get the young man some touchdowns and a little bit more national relevance, I think folks would realize. I probably, like, you know, I think he's more around like the 15 to 17 sort of a range. I'm making up that number, right? You put me, made me sit down a list and rank the top 20. It would take me a day. Like, it's such a challenging exercise. But I do like Terry McLaurin quite a bit. I probably would have him a little bit higher. I think that the league really tends to like some of the guys who have some more speed and some more downfield explosive potential, and I think that that's great. I think that Terry has more of that than people realize, and he's also just so good, so tough, middle of the field, separating and what have you. So I like a Terry, probably have a little bit higher, but, you know, I might wake up on the other side of the bed tomorrow and disagree with that. It's a hard exercise.
You know, each year when we're having these conversations, especially recently, you know, it's the young guys come in, there's a bunch of young guys every year, the young guys from last year who are going to take that next jump. Some guys, you know, end up moving back. Some guys jump. I mean, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown's taking the biggest jump here over the last 2 years. Who's the next guy that's right now lurking, you know, on the 15 to 29, you know, category of receivers that you think ends up, you know, really pushing that elite group?
Elite is tough. I think it's really hard to get into that elite group. I really like what Drake London does in Atlanta. I think that he has suffered for the quarterback play there because he's the sort of guy who you just got to trust him to make you right. You don't have, when you see Drake London, he looks like he's covered. He's open. You can go get the football from just about anywhere. Got a big catch radius. I think London's going to have a very nice year with Kirk Cousins. Would not surprise me if he's a 1,300-yard receiver, 10 touchdowns, just high-volume, middle-of-the-field dominant guy. And then talking about, again, you know, quarterback situations and offensive situations that haven't helped out their guy, Chris Olave with the New Orleans Saints, man. Oh, Chris Olave can play. Chris Olave is so fast. He's so quick. He's such a good separator. He's got such good hands. And all he wants is a quarterback who will hang in the pocket and deliver him the football. And when you got Derek Carr there, you don't really have a guy who can survive pressure as much. And so I think London probably can't push the elite group just because skill set-wise, he's not like a walking 50-yard touchdown. But I do think that he can get a lot closer to that top 10 range. Chris Olave is the guy who, like, if someone's going to become a top 5 receiver over the next couple of years, man, get Chris Olave a quarterback down in the bayou, see what he can do.
One guy that I've actually just from afar have been – it's just been a shame because he's been injured, because he hasn't had a quarterback. But I think Courtland Sutton has that kind of ability if he ever stayed healthy and got into the right situation. What do you think?
Yeah, Sutton, the thing about Sutton that's so nice, and this is also true of London, is that this is like a throwback body type. This is a true traditional right. X receiver body type. 6'3", 215, long arms, going to beat you in a tight window. The league has gotten so much better at making some shorter guys work at receiver.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Give you an update from the Miami joint practice coming up here next hour. Miami's beat group seems to be very impressed with Jaden Daniels. It's a joint practice, people. But there was an injury, not to a significant player. trying to get Ben standing on the show before the end of it. We'll see if it works out based on the timing of this joint practice ending. Jumping on with us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest listener line, is Ben Solak from ESPN. I read for a while yesterday, and we talked a lot about the story that he wrote about Brandon Ayuk. You know, should the 49ers trade him or should they pay him? And I read, you know, a good part of the description of Ayuk under the heading, just how good is Brandon Ayuk? We can talk to Ben about a lot of other things, but I wanted to start there because I think one of the thing. So I have thought all along, A, it would be absolutely idiotic if the 49ers traded him. The Super Bowl is the goal for them this year, and he is significant to their chances. Why would they want to give him up for a second and a fourth and a player and lessen their chances? And then on the flip side, Ben, I've been an advocate, you know, as long as Adam Peters likes the person, for Washington to be aggressive in trying to trade for him. And the pushback, I really think, stems from some of the stuff you wrote about the wide receiver position being really hard to kind of sort out. You know, you wrote, the position is so oversaturated with talent, it warps our perspective on somebody like Brandon Ayuk. And so I wanted to start there with just how talented the wide receiver position is in the game and how hard it is to decipher, you know, between these guys, putting them into the proper categories because there's so much context around their performance.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I want to let you know your audio is going in and out.
Ben, we're kind of losing you. We don't have a good connection with Ben. Let's see if we can reestablish Denton. That was his line, right?
Yes, it was. I'm going to give him a call back.
Yeah, let's see if we can get him back. Because I think he was telling us that there's an issue with him hearing our broadcast on our hotline. But yeah, we'll talk more NFL. We're not going to make this exclusive to Brandon Ayuk, but I think there's a lot in his dissection of Brandon Ayuk and whether or not it makes sense to trade Brandon Ayuk and to whom that speaks to just the wide receiver position in the league. Let me know when we have him.
He's back.
Back. All right, we've got Ben. Ben, I think you heard my setup, and then you were breaking up. But let's see if we've got a clearer connection now. Go ahead.
No, this sounds way smoother to me. I was trying to figure out your question with kind of every other word there a little bit.
Well, essentially, what I said was I loved your story, and I read from it a lot on the show yesterday. But it just illustrates, you know, there's this one line that you've got in your story where you write about the wide receiver position. It's oversaturated with talent, which warps our perspective. And I thought you could just start there on the challenges of evaluating this position right now.
Yes. So the reality of wide receiver in the league is that there are so many different body types that can work. There's so many different roles that can work. There's so many different ways to be successful at wide receiver that it becomes very hard to say, like, okay, who's the best? Who's the second best? Who's the top 10 guy? Like, take Amon-Ra St. Brown, for example, the wide receiver for the Detroit Lions. Probably, like, pound for pound, one of the most talented receivers in the league. Maybe the most talented, like, in terms of the routes and in terms of the hands and in terms of the technical aspects of the position, the stuff that you can train, the stuff that you can drill. The reality is that he does not have the speed of, like a full deep threat all the way down the field nine ball guy, nor does he have the size of, like, a contested catch guy down the field. So he ends up being a slot receiver who largely does his work 5 to 15 yards down the field. It's just not as valuable of a role as, like, a Mike Evans, who, you know, arguably you would say, oh, maybe he's less talented, runs worse routes than Amon-Ra St. Brown, but hey, he's 6'5", 230, and he can moss guys. And so you go and you get him those targets down the field. So because there's such a variety of body types that work, and there's such a variety of ways to make those body types work, you end up with a guy on, like, every team who you can argue at any given time is like, oh, maybe he's top 15, top 20. Like, Terry McLaurin is excellent. George Pickens is excellent. Like, you jump other, the random guys from random, you know, oh, Calvin Ridley with the Titans, oh, Christian Kirk with the Jaguars. Like, are any of these guys, like, you know, making you quiver in your boots? No, but, like, also any of them at any time could go for 1,200 yards in a season, right? So we have that level of wide receiver production. Accordingly, when you have a player like Brandon Ayuk, who's definitely talented, no question that he is, but also played in the most explosive offense in the league, and also gets to play next to Deebo Samuel and George Kittle, and then gets a lot of curated coverages and predictable coverages because he plays in a Shanahan offense. We know for sure that he's good. We're positive. He's definitely good. How good is he? I mean, somebody else got to figure that out. That is a very challenging question to answer relative to the rest of the wide receivers in the league.
Yeah, you know, like you said, like part of it too is what you just specifically mentioned relating to Ayuk is how much of it is Kyle and what they do to get people open in the run game, etc. But I'm wondering, with all of that said, are there, in your opinion, a couple of guys that you feel confident are in that elite category, and no matter where they would be, unless they were playing with an absolute horrendous quarterback situation, would be elite?
Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill. I think that I'm almost there with CeeDee Lamb. I think that the player that CeeDee Lamb has become has gotten to that point. Like, you know, his role has changed a lot over his time there in Dallas. They use him more on the outside. They use him on a more diverse route tree. He probably still is a little bit more of like a slot merchant and a free release merchant than I think a Justin Jefferson is or a Ja'Marr Chase is. He's right on the cusp. I think if this were Dallas radio, I probably would have just said CeeDee Lamb so I didn't get yelled at. But definitely Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, and Tyreek Hill. To me, like, I would say those are the three for sure.
You know what's interesting about that? I agree with you, and I think that a lot of people would come up with those three. And personally, I would have had Davante Adams closer than CeeDee Lamb, but whatever.
Adams is a great call out as well. Yeah.
What's interesting about that, Ben, is that you talked about the less value in being primarily in the slot. And Kevin O'Connell consistently looking for the right matchups would have at times Jefferson, when the ball was snapped, whether it was through motion or formation, in the slot. Tyreek Hill, the same thing. Is there really a massive difference in value in those that... I'm not saying Jefferson is... He's an outside guy. We understand that. But many times he ended up in the slot based on them trying to create the right kind of matchups. Explain to everybody why there's a huge value difference between the guy that lines up in the slot primarily versus on the outside.
So there's two key points. The first is that it is much harder to press a slot receiver than it is to press an outside receiver.
True.
Slot receivers typically lined up out, off of the ball, right, off the line of scrimmage. Outside receivers more frequently line up on the ball. Obviously, bunch formations, Shanahan offense, people change this a lot. But generally, your slot receiver is harder to press because it's harder to get a nickel defender up to the line of scrimmage. You typically need that guy to be off the line of scrimmage a little bit because he has to be in the run fit, right? So it's more difficult to press a slot than it is to press an outside receiver. And then secondly, when you're lined up in the slot, you have what we call two-way go on offense. That means when I go into my route, I can break inside or I can break outside. Versus when you line up as a receiver outside the numbers, you can break inside, run a slant, run a dig. You can't really break outside. You're going to go into the sideline, right? And so because we have a two-way go from the slot, and because we're getting pressed less frequently from the slot, it is easier to be successful as a route runner, as a separator, as an underneath target. It is dramatically easier to do that from the slot than from the outside. Accordingly, when we see players who are dominant on the outside, we say, okay, this means a little bit more. Think about like a Ja'Marr Chase in Cincinnati just always lining up on the outside. This means a little bit more than a player like Amon Ross St. Brown always lining up in the slot and generally being dominant in the slot because it's a little bit more challenging. Then you talk about a player like Justin Jefferson and you say, all right, we know he's elite. We know we can line him up on the outside and he would win most reps. But hey, like, it is easier from the slot and we can run more routes from the slot. We can run those in-breaking routes and those out-breaking routes. So let's put Jefferson there. Let's take our elite player and then also get the added benefits, the added ease, the added advantages of putting a player in the slot. And that's why you see guys like Tyreek Hill and Justin Jefferson and even Ja'Marr Chase. Chase was asking early in the offseason to play more time in the slot. Something he wants to do now that Tyler Boyd isn't on that team anymore because, hey, it's a lot easier there to be successful.
Who's the best pure slot receiver in the game right now? Somebody who lines up exclusively as a slot receiver?
So there probably isn't like a guy who lines up exclusively. The answer should be St. Brown. He is predominantly used as a slot receiver. If you go and you look at his data, you'll see a lot of reps where it's like, oh, he's the outside receiver in this set. Oftentimes, that's what we call a condensed set. That's a set where the outside receiver is still lined up
right
in the slot. He's still tight in the formation. I would say Cooper Kupp also, like when Cooper Kupp had the triple crown there at Los Angeles in 2021, when he had led the league in receiving touchdowns and receptions and receiving yards, he did a lot of that work from the slot. And again, very condensed formations. Rams and Lions offense is very similar. They, even when he was outside, he would still be lined up tight to the formation so he'd get that inside-outside release. I think those are your guys who you'd put up there. There's obviously dudes who are like just slot receivers in the league. There are your, like, Tyler Boyds of the world. Tyler Boyd is a great slot receiver who just plays in the slot. He can't really do anything on the outside of it. Tyler Lockett was a little bit of that. He obviously gets deeper down the field in that defense, but Lockett's of a similar mold, guys like that.
Talking to Ben Solak from ESPN. So back to Ayuk, because you made the case that he had one of the great seasons in recent memory in 2023 when you talked about his explosive rate and his catch percentage rate in combination. Mm-hmm. Just explain that to everybody that's listening.
Yeah, I think anybody that watches football will tell you that if I want to throw the ball 40 yards down the field, I'm less likely to get a completion than if I throw it 4 yards down the field, right? Much easier to complete passes at or near the line of scrimmage than further down the field. And so the typical trade-off that we make, the typical exchange, is that if we're going to throw the ball, you know, intermediate level of the field, 15 yards down the field, if we're going to throw a deep bomb 30 yards down the field, we know this might end up being second and 10. We know this might land up being incompletion. One of the things that Ayuk did last year was he led the league in explosive catch rate. It was one of the highest explosive catch rates of the last 5 years. We're talking about 20-plus yard gains on the catch. And yet still had a dramatically above average catch rate. What a Brandon Ayuk target was extremely likely to equal a positive play and also extremely likely to equal an explosive positive play, a top-tier positive play. That's preposterous. That's not how this is supposed to work. It's supposed to be if I'm throwing the ball to Will Fuller, or if I'm throwing the ball to DeSean Jackson, or I'm throwing the ball to Ted right. Ginn Jr. and all these field stretchers, then, hey, like, this might not work. And Brandon Ayuk was like, no, it's going to work. Don't worry about it. Like, this is just an automatic 24 yards. Is that, would you like that in your offense? Is that helpful? That's unbelievable. It's a total cheat code. And so if that success is endemic to Ayuk, if it's Ayuk's talent that's creating that, he's one of the most valuable players in the league. If it's Kyle Shanahan's offense that's creating that, then we ought to talk a little bit more about, okay, fit, how much of this is IU, can he take this somewhere else, so on and so forth.
So what's the conclusion to that? And maybe you didn't reach it, although I do feel like you had a strong opinion that he elevated Kittle, McCaffrey, and Samuel more than the opposite of that, that it was more him elevating the production of all of that talent on offense versus him being elevated by somebody other than him specifically.
Yeah, so I think that if Brandon Ayuk were to leave the 49ers, it would be unreasonable to expect him to deliver the season he just did. 1,300 receiving yards, insane efficiency. It's not going to be that good. I still think it can be pretty good. I still think that he can be a high explosive rate receiver because he has such great long speed. He's good after the catch. He's great separating on those intermediate routes. He's probably not going to have as good of a catch rate, right? Brock Purdy really trusted him with throwing him the ball. You know, he's tightly covered and let Ayuk do work for him. You go play for Russell Wilson, it's not going to be the same, right? Even if you go play for like a Jayden Daniels, you know, okay, he'll trust you. He'll throw these explosive patterns, but it's going to be more erratic because he's a rookie. And so I do think that the catch rate would go down and the consistency would go down. But I do think that Ayuk deserves a pretty big portion of that pie, a pretty good share of the success. And so is he top five, which kind of, you know, his season numbers last year would indicate? Probably not. Is he, you know, definitely like fringe top 10, certainly top 15? Yeah, I think so. I think you're looking at like one of the better wide receiver ones in the league, a top half wide receiver one in the league. And there isn't a team in the NFL who would say no to that, right? Everybody needs a talent like that at wide receiver.
You know, I think the other thing, too, and your focus was much more on, obviously, the pass reception aspect of this. But, you know, Jay Gruden was on with me and just said, Brandon Ayuk is a phenomenal blocker. Juwan Jennings, he said, it may be the best wide receiver blocker in the league. But the 49er group with Samuel, Ayuk, and Jennings is the best group of wide receivers who block that may have ever been assembled. So how do you view him as a blocker?
He's an excellent blocker, and a big part of him getting out of Kyle Shanahan's doghouse, because we have to remember in the 2021 season,
right,
Shanahan was pretty frustrated with that. Like, a big part of that was the dirty work he started to do as a blocker. And if you're going to play in this offense, we talked about Cooper Kupp and St. Brown lining up tight to the formation. If you're going to line up tight to the formation in this Kyle Shanahan offense, you have to be able to go block somebody. You have to be part of the running game, part of the run-blocking design. So absolutely, Juwan Jennings is the GOAT in this regard. He's unbelievable. But Brandon Ayuk does more than his fair share, especially for being a little bit of a thinner player. He's not like, you know, the stockiest guy. He goes and he does his work. That's very valuable for Kyle Shanahan. It's not as valuable for other teams, right? And so, like, if we brought up the Commanders again, in a Cliff Kingsbury offense, you know, an air raid, we spread the sucker out four wide. Wide receiver blocking, it's good to be a good, what we call a stock blocker, where you can go and block a guy on a wide receiver screen, right? Throw a little bubble screen to Terry McLaurin. Brandon Ayuk goes and hits a nice block. That's valuable. but it's not nearly as valuable as if you were tight to the formation blocking on a running play. And that's just not going to be part of the offense in Washington. They're not going to ask the receivers to block very much. And so Ayuk's blocking talent is definitely, like, it's there. He's a good blocker. How much that matters for the team acquiring him depends a lot on scheme. Because if you're not running this system, you don't actually need your wide receivers to be that good at blocking.
I actually think it's going to be more valuable here than you think going in. I think they're going to be more run heavy than people are thinking because they think Cliff Kingsbury isn't that. But I think there'll be a lot of sort of what he did with Connor and Chase Edmonds in 2021, more emphasis on the run. But we'll see. We're talking to Ben Solak. He can be followed on X on Twitter, at Benjamin Solak, S-O-L-A-K. I love this story that he did the other day. So let me just conclude with this aspect of the discussion. Do you think the 49ers should trade Ayuk? Do you think they will? And if they did, where would the best fit be?
Should? No, they should not. They should keep Brandon Ayuk. He's the youngest of their weapons, right? Talk about Kittle and McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel. Yeah. He's the youngest guy. He's the guy that I think can better shepherd them into the future once they have to start living in the world where Brock Purdy's making $55, $60 million a year. I would be keeping Brandon Ayuk. I would be looking to trade Deebo Samuel before I trade Brandon Ayuk. Will they trade Brandon Ayuk? Ask Schefter, man. Like, at this point, I don't know. This has been going on for weeks. I lean no. I think they're going to get this ball across the line, right? They've had, you know, Deebo Samuel requested a trade 2 summers ago and, like, wasn't talking to them about contracts at all, and they were able to unfreeze that ice and remend those fences and then get that extension done. And so they've you know, gone out of sticky situations before. I think they'll get this done. I think it'll be an extension and they keep him. But, like, I'm 51 extension, 49 they trade him. You know, like, it is about 50-50 as things look from the outside. Which team would be the best to acquire him? I mean, like, it seems like no matter what, he's going to be a Steeler. I think the fit with the Steelers is good from a schematic perspective. You're going to see a lot of those in-breaking routes that he's been so good at with Kyle Shanahan. You're going to see a lot of those from Arthur Smith, who's the OC there in Pittsburgh. So I think that's a good fit. They involve their wide receivers in the blocking scheme. I think that'll help them out with Brandon Ayuk. Obviously, quarterback situation there is a total mess, right? It's completely up and down. But you're playing for a guy in Mike Tomlin who's a really good players coach. So he can, I think, help. You know, if Ayuk is frustrated by lack of targets, frustrated by lack of success, I think that Tomlin is pretty well equipped to kind of keep that comfortable and keep that okay and keep those tempers down until they can solve the quarterback position. So Pittsburgh is a good fit. I think of the teams that were rumored, probably the best fit was Cleveland, but it sounds like they're out of the deal right now. Washington is a fine fit because it's a spread and shred, space you out sort of an offense, and I used to have so much speed. So it's a fine fit. I think that a player I use talent fits just about anywhere, but of the teams rumored, Cleveland was probably best. I do think that if he gets traded, he ends up at Pittsburgh, and I think that's a good fit for him as well.
You wrote in your column, and I read this yesterday too, about the wide receiver position. You said, you know, it warps our perspective because it's so oversaturated with talent when we talk about, you know, who the best are. You wrote the 15th best quarterback in the league is someone like Kirk Cousins or Jared Goff. The 15th best pass rusher is somebody like Alex Highsmith or Rashawn Gary. But the 15th best wide receiver is closer to Mike Evans. And, you know, and then you referenced the Jeremy Fowler, you know, surveying of the coaches, the execs, league execs, when he was doing his top 10 at each position, and 29 different receivers got at least one vote for the top 10, and you wrote, the cream of the receiver crop has never been richer. Terry McLaurin essentially came in 21st on that list. Where would you have him?
A little bit higher. I love me a scary Terry. I do. I think that if we could get the young man some touchdowns and a little bit more national relevance, I think folks would realize. I probably, like, you know, I think he's more around like the 15 to 17 sort of a range. I'm making up that number, right? You made me sit down a list and rank the top 20. It would take me a day. Like, it's such a challenging exercise. But I do like Terry McLaurin quite a bit. I probably would have him a little bit higher. I think that the league really tends to like some of the guys who have some more speed and some more downfield explosive potential, and I think that that's great. I think that Terry has more of that than people realize, and he's also just so good, so tough, middle of the field, separating and what have you. So I like a Terry, probably have a little bit higher, but, you know, I might wake up on the other side of the bed tomorrow and disagree with that. It's a hard exercise.
You know, each year when we're having these conversations, especially recently, you know, it's The young guys come in. There's a bunch of young guys every year. The young guys from last year who are going to take that next jump. Some guys, you know, end up moving back. Some guys jump. I mean, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown's taking the biggest jump here over the last 2 years. Who's the next guy that's right now lurking, you know, on the 15 to 29, you know, category of receivers that you think ends up, you know, really pushing that elite group?
Elite is tough. I think it's really hard to get into that elite group. I really like what Drake London does in Atlanta. I think that he has suffered for the quarterback play there, because he's the sort of guy who you just got to trust him to make you right. You don't have to, when you see Drake London, he looks like he's covered. He's open. You can go get the football from just about anywhere. Got a big catch radius. I think London's going to have a very nice year with Kirk Cousins. Would not surprise me if he's a 1,300-yard receiver, 10 touchdowns, just high-volume, middle-of-the-field dominant guy. And then talking about, again, you know, quarterback situations and offensive situations that haven't helped out their guy, Chris Olave with the New Orleans Saints, man. Oh, Chris Olave can play. Chris Olave is so fast. He's so quick. He's such a good separator. He's got such good hands. And all he wants is a quarterback who will hang in the pocket and deliver him the football. And when you got Derek Carr there, you don't really have a guy who can survive pressure as much. And so I think London probably can't push the elite group just because skill set-wise, he's not like a walking 50-yard touchdown. But I do think that he can get a lot closer to that top 10 range. Chris Olave is the guy who, like, if someone's going to become a top 5 receiver over the next couple of years, man, get Chris Olave a quarterback down in the bayou, see what he can do.
One guy that I've actually just from afar have been – it's just been a shame because he's been injured, because he hasn't had a quarterback. But I think Courtland Sutton has that kind of ability if he ever stayed healthy and got into the right situation. What do you think?
Yeah, Sutton, the thing about Sutton that's so nice, and this is also true of London, is that this is like a throwback body type. This is a true traditional right. X receiver body type. 6'3", 215, long arms, going to beat you in a tight window. The league has gotten so much better at making some shorter guys work at receiver and some thinner guys work at receiver and some quicker guys work at receiver. But it's so handy, man. 3rd and 7, you need a guy to get a bucket for you. It's so nice to have that guy who's a big traditional size, the big traditional arm. Like, and that's Courtland Sutton, right? And then you brought up, right, lack of quarterback play, and he's been hurt and whatever. The one thing that Sutton's always been able to deliver, independent of the quarterback that's there, independent of his health, he is very, very good in the red zone. He is extremely good in the end zone. He puts 6 points on the board for you. And, like, you know, a lot of times touchdown is regression heavy, right? You have 8 1 year and you have 4 the next year. Just kind of an opportunity thing. Courtland Sutton consistently delivers over expectation in the red zone. He is very talented in that area of the field.
Last one. I've got 5 seconds. Neighbors, Harrison Jr., Odunze. Who has the best rookie year?
Harrison Jr. has the best rookie year. Rome Odunze has the best career.
Thanks for doing this. Really appreciated the story you wrote and the time you gave us. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, you take care now. Be well.
Yep. Denton's got some news next.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.